KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
The voice of the everyday American. It's time for Radical Russ. This is the Russ Belville Show.
Welcome back. 22 after the hour. Glad to have you here. And let's get right to our big story.
Now it's time for the big story.
Oh, my. What a big story you have.
Thanks. Now here's Radical Russ.
Yeah, everybody's talking about it. The revelation by former presidential candidate, former vice presidential candidate and former Senator John Edwards admitting on ABC's Nightline that he did have an affair with one of his campaign staff.
In 2006, 2 years ago, I made a very serious mistake. A mistake that I am responsible for and no one else.
Yeah, so this has been eating up the airwaves, and we want to talk about it here on the show. So our phone number here is 888-7-RADICAL. A lot of things to consider here in this John Edwards admission. First of all, we got to realize that he was having this affair, according to his interview there. He was having this affair in 2006 prior to announcing his candidacy for the 2008 presidential nomination. And he had had the affair and admitted it to his wife, and they went through the whole family and they worked their way through it. And then he decides he's going to run for president. I really got to question the wisdom of that one. I'm of the mind that what people want to do in their bedrooms and with other consenting adults, that's up to them. You know, I'm not too concerned about it. Except when we're talking about hypocrisy. You know, I've heard this come up a lot, too. People talking about, well, you know, John Edwards did this. If this were a Republican, you'd be all over it. And I have been in the past, you know, when we talked about, Diaper Dave Vitter, you know, soliciting prostitutes and Larry Craig in the bathroom.
Let me be clear. I am
yes,
not gay.
Larry.
I never have been
yes,
gay.
Yes, we know you've never been gay. So we've been all over this when we talked about, you know, the Republican hypocrites. And we've talked about Newt Gingrich having his numerous affairs and Rush Limbaugh having his numerous affairs. So are we going to treat it the same here on the left side of the aisle when we're talking about John Edwards? What do you think about that? Is it hypocritical of those of us on the left to not cast aspersions on John Edwards like we did with all these Republicans? Our phone number here is 888-7-RADICAL if you want to get an opinion in on this. I think in this situation that the biggest problem here is not the sex that was involved here and what went on with his family. It's that he would have the bad judgment and the arrogance to run for president knowing this is back in the closet, knowing that this little nugget of information is just waiting to erupt on the media scene. Can you imagine if he had gotten the nomination, if John Edwards has gotten the nomination, and this comes out 2 weeks before the Democratic convention? We'd have been handing the White House to the Republican Party for another 4 years. That's what I've got a problem with in this Edwards affair. Let's go to the phone lines. I've got Ken in Tucson, Arizona. Ken, welcome to the Russ Belville Show.
Hey, Russ, how are you?
Doing great, man.
You know what? My parents always taught me something. They said, if you always try to do the right thing, don't worry about the consequences because things will work out eventually. And the problem with the Democrats, you were talking about football before,
yep.
It's like they always start out in a prevent defense.
Mm-hmm.
They play not to lose. I think Gore did it. Kerry did it. I'm afraid Obama's not doing it. You don't have to play dirty to play hard. And it's the same thing with this impeachment thing. They say, well, we're taking it off the table. And now they say, well, there's no time. But if they, on day one, when they took over the Congress, if they had seriously started like doing what Kucinich wanted to do and what Conyers wanted to do, if they had started serious hearings, even if they didn't impeach the guy, we could, all this stuff could be out there. We could be making so much progress, at least at getting this out to the American people. Instead of having this piecemeal stuff, and you know, we need to play to win.
Yeah, Ken, you win the nail on the head award for that one, because I've been saying that for a while now, is that the Democrats are playing as if it's 5 minutes left in the fourth quarter and they're ahead by 16 points. Well, you know, speaking of the New York Jets, I saw the Jets come back, you know, in a game like that where they were down like 30 or something. I mean, you're right. The Democrats are playing, especially in this election, it seems like since Pelosi and Reid took the Congress, that the whole idea of the Democratic Party is these Republicans have messed up so bad, let's not do anything to distract from how bad the Republicans are, instead of trying to point out how good the Democrats could be.
And I don't know why Obama, somehow they seem to think that playing hard, hitting hard is playing dirty. You know, Rocky Balboa used to beat the tar out of his opponents, but he never hit him below the belt.
Exactly. We don't have to go into the muck, you know, like John McCain is doing with his ads here, you know, trying to say things like country first, as if Obama's not, you know, an American, or what's his latest slogan was an American president for America. As if Barack Obama's not an American. We don't need to do that. We don't need to go there. But there's all sorts of ways that we could fight back harder and make your point. I totally agree with you, Ken. And thanks for your call. I appreciate that. The other thing about this John Edwards thing that I want to bring up too is I hear a lot from, you know, and having Stevie on my staff, you know, I pay a lot of attention to what Europeans are thinking about our politics. This is a mystery to Europeans. I mean, they just have their guys have affairs, and they figure that's their business, and it has nothing to do with how they govern. I mean, isn't that right, Stevie?
That is absolutely 100% true. I mean, really, seriously, who cares? I'm reminded of a story in Russia. This was years ago, where one of the high ministers was caught on video in a hotel room with two women. And that did nothing for his popularity but boost it.
Yeah, exactly. Really? Here in America, we've got this puritanical streak.
Thou shalt not.
Yeah, we expect all our politicians to be squeaky clean. It ain't going to happen. It's 29 after the hour. The phone number here is 888-7-RADICAL. We're talking about John Edwards. Get on the line. Let's talk about it, America. I'm Radical Russ. We're right back in just a few minutes.
Touch that dial. We're right back to Radical Russ in just a few minutes. Hey, does anybody really have a dial anymore? You're listening to the Russ Belville Show.
OJ and 620KBOJ.com.
Call Radical Russ now at 1-888-7-RADICAL. This is the Russ Belville Show.
That's right, it surely is, and we'll be talking to you on your calls here just a little bit here. It's time for
Power to the People.
That's right, let's turn things over to the good and wise people of North America and hear your voices.
Power to the people.
Stand up together and fight the power. Let our leaders know how you feel. We got to give the people what they want. And right, we're talking now about the John Edwards admission to his affair.
I'm in love with one woman. I've been in love with one woman for 31 years. And she is the finest human being I have ever known.
So this John Edwards admission, why now? Why would Edwards come out now and admit this affair in public? It's not like he's running for anything right at the moment. He has been dogged by this scandal. Some of the tabloids have been putting it out there, and I guess maybe he's trying to end that. But really, is there a real reason that he needed to bring this affair out in public now? Is this something, did he need to put his wife through it again, his wife who's suffering with cancer and the rest of his family? Was there a real need to bring this out again? Why not just keep quiet with this and let it just be the tabloid rumor that everybody thought it was? It really wasn't getting a whole lot of publicity, wasn't getting a whole lot of shine on the network. So what's the point in admitting that now, in coming clean now? Is this a calculated political move by John Edwards, thinking that, you know, he may run again sometime in the future? Why go about doing this? You know, it's kind of interesting hearing the responses from people about this subject. And I hear some people talking about how they're not upset about the sex that happened. They're not upset about the affair that went on in private. They're upset that he lied about it, that when he was on the campaign trail, he was lying about the affair. They feel betrayed by that. And so I had to turn to one of these people and I said, yeah, that's kind of what they said about Bill Clinton, right? It wasn't the sex. It was the lying about the affair. So is this really the big issue that anyone would try to make it out to be? And the other thing I want to know, why is John Edwards, somebody who's not running for president at the moment, why is his adultery a big story in the media? And why not John McCain? You know, John W. McCain has admitted to adultery in his past. His current wife, Cindy McCain, he was cheating with her on his former wife. Now, you remember he was married before, and he was a POW, right? John McCain was a POW. While he was a POW, his first wife got in a car wreck and was severely injured. And as she was suffering and you know, he was having this affair with this Cindy, who became Cindy McCain. So why does the media make such a big deal about John Edwards admitting to an affair when we have an actual presidential candidate who has had an affair in the past? Does that explain also maybe why we're not hearing much from the Republican side on this as far as trying to drag it through the mud? I mean, they know that there's some scandal in John McCain's life back there. And what about poor Elizabeth Edwards? I mean, we got to think about that angle, too. You know, she, like we said, she's suffering with cancer. And then in 2006, she gets this bombshell from her husband telling her that, you know, he's been having this affair. Why did Elizabeth Edwards then counsel her husband to go ahead with running for the nomination for the Democratic Party? That's another thing that just kind of stinks in this whole issue to me is, you know, if she was looking out for her husband and his career, wouldn't she counsel him to, you know, maybe take a break on this one, maybe sit 2008 out and see what happens in the coming years? And also this whole adultery scandal, again, I just keep coming back to this European view on it that, you know, what's the big deal? You know, powerful men have affairs. You know, it says over 50% of married people have affairs, especially men. But, you know, what does this have to do with how good of a candidate he would be? Do we sense some hypocrisy here? Is he a hypocrite for bringing his loving family together for the campaign photo ops and milking the respect he gets for standing by his wife with cancer? Is that the problem people have with it? Is that it's a hypocritical stance to take? And if so, is it any more hypocritical than what we've seen from the Republican Party over the past, you know, 6-7 years with your Foleys and Dave Vitters and Larry Craigs? It's really interesting stuff, and if you'd like to talk about it, our phone number here is 888-7-RADICAL. That's 888-772-3422. Let's go to the phones right now. I've got John in Fort Myers, Florida. John, welcome to the show.
Hi, Russ. Thank you. I just wanted to say I didn't hear about this about Senator Edwards until I listened to Sean Hannity yesterday just rail on it for 3 solid hours yesterday. Mm. And it's very disappointing to me as a Democrat because I actually voted for John Edwards in Florida in the primary, and then he dropped out the very next day that our primary was over. And it just disappoints me that he would give the right this kind of ammunition to just, you know, go wall to wall with it, especially now it's on Fox News. And it just really burns me. You know what I mean, Russ?
Yeah. It's you know, I can see, you know, first of all, let's do the whole thing about, you know, we haven't walked a mile in John Edwards' shoes, right? He loses in 2004. I'm sure he's hugely disappointed that John Kerry doesn't take the fight in Ohio like he should have. By 2006, you know, his wife's diagnosed with cancer. Who knows what pressures John Edwards was going through? I'm not trying to excuse the affair. I'm just saying the man's gone through a lot of pressures here, and this happens. Men cheat. But that's not, like I said, that's not the problem I have with it. It's like you say, it's giving them this silver platter, you know, ammunition that they can fight and use against Democrats in general. If he knew he had this affair, why didn't he just sit it out? That's where I've got the problem.
And you're right. I didn't think about why now. Why admit to it now? What is the motive here?
Yeah.
You know?
The timing, you know, I can see that, you know, if you are going to admit it, the timing works out perfectly. You admit it late on a Friday, you know, when all the news media is not going to be paying too much attention, and at the beginning of the Olympics opening ceremonies day, right? So that's going to get buried, or at least he hopes it gets buried. So I can understand why the timing, if you're going to say it, but why say it at all? Why come out with it at all? I don't understand.
And I'm really curious, Russ. Bill O'Reilly has always had a problem with John Edwards.
Oh, yeah.
and I'm waiting for noon on Monday when his show comes on. And with what Bill O'Reilly went through in his personal life, how could he ever say anything about John Edwards? You know what I mean?
Yeah, anytime Bill O'Reilly wants to bring any of that up, all you got to say is Andrea Macris.
Exactly.
You say two words, conversation over.
Yes.
Well, thank you, John, for your call. I appreciate that. And anybody else wants to get on the line, it's 888-7-RADICAL. That's 888-772-3422. Now, like I said earlier, this John Edwards isn't running for president anymore. And I feel a little like John, too, because I was an Edwards guy. You know, my wife, she went for Kucinich early and often. And, gosh, while I love Dennis Kucinich and what he stands for, I was kind of, you know, buying into that idea that, well, we got to pick someone who's going to be electable. You know, I bought that hook, line, and sinker, and I shouldn't have. But, yeah, I was supporting John Edwards for a long time until he dropped out. And this makes me wonder also, John mentions it right after the Florida primary, how Edwards just mysteriously, you know, just dropped out suddenly. And everybody was kind of surprised by that when he was running a strong third-place campaign. Do you think this might have had something to do with it? Do you think maybe he sees the writing on the wall? Did he get some sort of tip that this was going to start to come out, and he realized he had to drop out immediately? So many questions that are opened up now that we have this this revelation about John Edwards and this campaign. So how is this going to affect Barack Obama, though? That would be something to think about here, too. You know, this is going to be really hard, I think, for the right wing to try to tar Democrats in general with. I think it's limited here to John Edwards. Let's go back to the phones. We've got Phil in Chattanooga, Tennessee. Phil, welcome to the Russ Belville Show.
Hey, Russ. How you doing this afternoon?
Excellent so far.
Good. You know, I was just thinking about this, and it is, you know, a tragedy that this has happened, and I really, really hate it. However, you know, right now, it may be there's a possibility of taking a little bit of the heat off of Barack Obama. I mean, Sean Hannity, instead of bashing Obama, he's out there bashing Edwards. And, of course, Obama's on vacation and trying to get a little bit of rest up for this, you know, run to the convention. And there might be a way to make lemonade out of a lemon here.
Maybe you're right. Maybe that's the motivation for bringing this out. Is there a collusion in the Democratic Party here where they say, all right, John, if you're going to say something, say it now because Brock's going to be on vacation? I don't know. It sounds a little conspiracy theory to me, but it's an interesting way to look at that.
It really doesn't sound like there's a collusion or anything, but it seems like for the Democrats for the last 8 years, nothing's gone right as far as elections are concerned. And maybe we just got ourselves a little bit of luck.
Yeah, maybe so. Between the Olympics and John Edwards, not enough time to bash on Obama. That's a good point. Thank you for bringing that up. Appreciate that,
exactly.
Phil.
And could I bring up one more thing?
Sure, go right ahead.
Okay,
quick, though.
Great. You know, you talk to so many people and you hear that Barack Obama is not getting his message out. Everybody's saying, you know, no substance or anything.
Yeah.
And I cannot figure that out. And I know this is off subject, but I have been in sales my entire adult life, and I'm 53 years old. And when you're in sales, you have a... This has so that, therefore you. In other words, if you're doing it from a political standpoint, I will so that, therefore you. In other words, I will tax the rich instead of the poor so that this company gets straightened out, and therefore you will have money in your pocket at the end of the month instead of it being in ExxonMobil's pocket.
Yeah.
And I feel like we're getting a this has so that, but he's just not doing this therefore you thing.
Yeah, we need to have some stronger statements from Barack Obama. I agree with that. Let people know why a Democratic administration would be good rather than just why the Republican administration has been so bad. I appreciate that point. Thank you for making it, Phil. I got to run to a break, and coming up right after the break, our Lunatic Fringe Awards. Stay tuned. This is the Russ Belville Show.
You're tuned to the Russ Belville Show. AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
We're still waiting for Bill O'Reilly's response to our Lufa Joust and Falafel Off. This is the Russ Belville Show.
Welcome back. 50 after the hour. And you know, I don't even know how you judge a falafel off. Now it's time for our weekly roundup of the right wing's altered reality.
The lunatic is on the grass.
From the Guano Loco Neocon Chicken Hawks to the hypocritical American Taliban and the cable news punditocracy, the Russ Belville Show presents
to keep the loonies on the pot.
The Lunatic Fringe Award, an award dedicated to the politician, pundit, or preacher who said the most ignorant, hateful, or bizarre quote of the week. This time we just got three on the Lunatic Fringe Awards for today because it's quite a good three here. First of all, we got a newcomer, a minor leaguer, brought up from the AAA club, I believe, Chris Kroc. You love these right-wingers' names. You got Neil Bortz, Michael Wiener, and Chris Kroc. So Chris Kroc was guesting on a show, guest hosting a show, and I forget which one it was, but he was describing Barack Obama, and he was trying to indicate what a fraud or a sham Barack Obama was by playing this little metaphor of Barack Obama being a shiny new Christmas present under your Christmas tree.
And you get the present, you get your hands, oh yeah, and you're going to rip it up, and you open it up, and then what is inside is a sandwich.
A Christmas sandwich.
Saying, oh, sandwich.
Festive sandwich, of course it is.
Sandwich.
Yeah.
But what is it? What's inside of that sandwich? It is a stinking, stinky, hot, steamy crap sandwich.
Ew!
It is a stinky, hot, is a steaming hot pile of crap wedged between two pieces of bread. That is what Barack Obama is.
Oh my
he
God.
Is a steamy crap sandwich.
He says that with such eroticism in his voice.
So it reminds me of a German film I saw once. Yeah. Okay, so Obama is a crap sandwich. That's some high-level political debate
the
there. Yeah, Kroc says so, yeah. Let's go to the major leaguer here, the king of all right-wing gas bags, Rush Limbaugh. Talking about the Exxon Valdez spill, you know, they're trying to do this whole drill here, drill now. We got to drill for oil. We got to drill for oil. So all the right-wing water carriers are trying to point out how safe oil is and oil's not bad for the environment. You won't believe what Rush Limbaugh has to say about the current state of Alaska's Prince William Sound.
They're preparing a retrospective special, ladies and gentlemen, on the disaster that was the oil spill at Prince William Sound for the Exxon Valdez. What they will not tell you is that if you go up there today, you won't find any evidence of it. Nature cleaned up itself so damn fast. It was such a laughable thing to watch people with dish towels and Dawn dishwashing detergent wiping oil off of the rocks at Prince William Sound. The sea eats oil. The sea eats oil alive. That place up there, nature cleaned it up faster than we ever could.
So the sea eats oil and nature cleans itself up. That's what Rush Limbaugh wants you to believe. However, 17 years ago, scientists predicted the oil would be long gone by now. They, according to Jeffrey Short at the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration Research Chemistry, he says, we expected the decay rate to be 25% a year, but very little of the oil actually disappeared. What's left is going to be there a long time, end quote. Instead, the researchers estimate the oil is weathering away at 3 to 4% a year. It will be readily detectable for decades. And although significant progress has been made, using the definition of recovery, the coastal and marine ecosystems in the oil spill region have not fully recovered from the effects of the Valdez oil spill some 17 years ago. So don't believe the hype. They're lying to you.
Okay. Wait a second here, right? So the Kroc... gets crap sandwiches for Christmas.
Right.
And El Rushbo says the sea eats oil alive.
You got it.
And the war on drugs is happening where?
In Rush Limbaugh's pill cabinet. Yeah. But our winner for today, oh, we got a big winner for today. Sean Hannity, he just signed a $100 million radio contract. Sean Hannity is talking about Barack Obama, and they're still playing that thing about Obama saying, I don't look like the president's on the dollar bill. They're going to try to scare you. And, of course, the right wing jumped all over this, saying, oh, Obama's playing the race card. He's playing the race card. So check out this statement from Sean Hannity.
But I think they made a real tactical mistake here by playing the race card the way they did. You know, when Obama says they're going to scare Americans by saying he doesn't look like all those presidents on dollar bills, he can't mean anything other than race. In fact, Obama tipped his hand when he said it back in June. Oh, and did I mention he's black? Obama can't point to a single instance in which President Bush or McCain or Karl Rove or Sean Hannity or talk radio or any other major Republican has made an issue of Obama's race.
Can't point to a single instance where talk radio has made an issue of Obama's race? Stevie, that sounds like a dare to me. Fasten your seatbelts. It's time for the lightning round.
Here we go.
Rush Limbaugh.
So it's just, they just forgot that one thing, affirmative action for black guys. And if they had remembered to oppose that, then they wouldn't face the situation they face today.
Michael Savage.
Do you realize that this is or can be seen as the first affirmative action election in American history?
Glenn Beck.
If Hillary Clinton wants to be consistent, I believe affirmative action, she should give Barack Obama an additional 5 percentage points just for the years of oppression.
Rush Limbaugh again.
Hey, Barack Obama has picked up another endorsement. African-American actress Halle Berry.
Melanie
Senator
Morgan.
Obama. Who is, as you call, a Hafrican.
Hafrican, and again, his father was his father was from Kenya, his mother's white. He's not allowed to wear the African-American badge because his family are not the descendant of slaves.
Monica Crowley.
Barack Obama is not black African, he is Arab African. And yet this guy is campaigning as black and painting anybody who dares to criticize him as a racist. I mean, that is, it is the biggest con I think I've ever seen.
John Gibson talking to an African-American caller.
And you haven't dealt with the issues. You don't know what Barack Obama stands for. You just like him because he's like you, and you want to see one of you up there, and you don't care what he stands for.
Glenn Beck talking about Barack Obama again.
He's colorless.
Rush Limbaugh.
If Barack Obama were Caucasian, they would have taken this guy out on the basis of pure ignorance.
Robert Novak.
As poor Joe Biden said, he's clean, you know. He isn't.
Glenn Beck.
We're talking to Honky Whitesville.
Rush Limbaugh.
So my point in telling you this is that there must be real animosity toward...
So Sean Hannity, for demonstrating the typical ignorance of these things we call the Google and YouTube, you are the winner of this week's... This is the Russ Belleville Show, 58 after the hour. We'll be right back.
Welcome to AM 620 KPOJ. Now the Russ Belleville Show, streaming at 620kpoj.com and on the air at AM 620 KPOJ.
From the free speech zone called America. The weekend home for truly radical progressives. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back for hour two of the Russ Belleville Show. Glad to have you here this weekend, this Olympics weekend. And unfortunately, bad news from the Olympics already. A man who was the father-in-law of the United States Olympic volleyball team was stabbed and killed in a robbery in Shanghai, China, while he was visiting a tourist destination. He was stabbed and killed. His wife was also stabbed. She's in serious condition in the hospital. And then the Chinese man, 47-year-old Chinese man, climbed the tower they were visiting and leapt to his death, so committed suicide after the attack. So one American dead in Shanghai, China during the Olympics. A sad story to have to break here. Also, in the realm of sad stories, comedian Bernie Mac, one of the original kings of comedy, is dead at age 50 due to complications from pneumonia. So our condolences go out to the family of Bernie Mac and all his fans that will be missing him. I was a big fan of Bernie Mac. It's a shame that he's gone so soon. But on a brighter note, let's turn to our favorite immigrant worker, the man from across the pond, a right cheeky chap who says cheerio as he parks his lorry in the garage made of aluminium, our own Stevie Webb.
Hello, Governor.
How the heck do you guys get aluminium out of that, anyway?
That's how it's spelled. They just took an I out of it. I don't know. When the word traveled over here, you took an I out by way of taxes.
We lost an I, yeah.
Tea or whatever else you threw in the harbor. I don't know.
all right. Well, we got a whole bunch of stuff to have to cover again. As usual, 5 hours a show, 2 hours to get it done. So let's head on to our Living in America. Neocon progressives like to say that we liberals hate America first. I like to say we liberals love America most. That's why we're so disappointed in how badly regressives trash her reputation and treat her people. So today we help our leaders focus on the plight of the little guy by taking our look at... Ah, yes, living in America.
This is why I immigrated here. Yeah. James Brown.
Now, my, you may hear my dog Roscoe here. Roscoe has a story that he brought to me today.
Really?
Yeah, living in America isn't just about what happens to the little guys. It's also what happens to the little dogs. And my dog Roscoe is not very happy. That's right. He's got a story that he wants me to tell here, so I better get right to it. Those of you living in the Washington, D.C. area may have already picked up on this story from the Washington Post. It's just starting to break nationally. This is the story of a mayor, Shai Calvo, in Berwyn Heights, Maryland, just outside of Washington, D.C. He's the mayor of this town. And the story that happened, while it's excessive and it's cruel and it's shocking, it is by no means a rare story in the annals of the war on certain American citizens using non-pharmaceutical, non-alcoholic, tobacco-free drugs. This is what's happening in America. We are living in a state of war where our own government's making war on our own citizens. Let me set this up for you. The DEA had been investigating, and the police had been investigating, a package being mailed out of Arizona, a 32-pound package that was addressed to a woman named Trinity, who is the mayor's wife, okay? So the mayor's wife's named Trinity, and this package is in Arizona, 32-pound package, and they test it, and it tests positive for marijuana. So police suspect that there is a 32-pound marijuana package being mailed to this house in Maryland. Okay. So the police, dressed up as postal workers, take this 32-pound package and they try to deliver it to this mayor's house, to the wife, and she's not there, but the mother-in-law's there. The wife's mother is there, but she won't sign for it. So the police leave the 32-pound package on the doorstep, and then they go into stakeout mode, hiding and watching the porch, waiting for someone to pick up that package and take it into the house. Well, soon enough, the mayor, Shai Calvo, comes home, and he sees the package, and like anybody would do when they see a package on their step, they take it into the house. Now, the minute he takes this into the house, the police, acting on a no-knock warrant, which is very common in the drug war, no-knock warrant just means the police don't have to knock and announce themselves, police, warrant, they don't have to say that. They can just burst in with, you know, full firearms and everything, just burst in the door, right? So the mayor brings this package into the house, sets it down, goes upstairs. In that span of time, the police, dressed in full SWAT gear, you know, body armor, automatic weapons, break down the door, burst into the door. Now, as the police burst into the door, Shai Calvo has two dogs, not pit bulls, not any sort of fighting killer dogs or anything. He's got two black labs, black Labrador retrievers. He's got a 7-year-old and a 4-year-old black lab. Upon bursting into the door, the police shoot the 7-year-old black lab, kill it just immediately, right off the bat. According to reports, they said they felt threatened. But where I really have to question this report in how they felt threatened is after they shot the 7-year-old dog, the 4-year-old dog, probably freaked out by the noise and everything, runs away from the police. The police tracked that dog down. They chased after the dog and shot it in the back, shot it from behind. That's how frightened and scared they were of the black Labrador retriever, which is not exactly a breed known for its viciousness.
Have you ever run into a black lab? Have you ever been attacked by a black lab?
Only if you're a duck.
Yeah, nobody has been ever attacked by a black lab. They are the most sweetest and well-disposed dogs, which is why so many people have them as family pets.
Exactly. And that's what they were family pets. So the police come in and execute these two dogs. And this is not uncommon either. I read a lot of these reports, and a lot of times the police are doing this as a terrorization or intimidation factor. Oh, those bad druggies, we'll show them, we'll kill their dog. So the mayor, Shai Calvo, and his mother-in-law are questioned. They're detained. They're handcuffed. and sat down in the room with the corpses of their two freshly shot dogs with the blood running out onto the floor. And the wife later testified or later made the mention that they tracked the dog's blood all over the house, too, as they were searching around. Right. And they find the 32-pound package. They open it up. Sure enough, it's 32 pounds of marijuana. The mayor has no idea how that got there, who ordered it, what the heck's going on. Nobody knows what's going on. Okay, so there's the setup, right? That's what happened. Police break in on this no-knock warrant on a drug raid, break in, shoot the two dogs. Now, latest developments. They didn't have a no-knock warrant. No. According to Prince George's County authorities, when they broke in, they did not have a no-knock warrant, contrary to what the police said after the incident. Now, the judge in Maryland there, they did grant a warrant. This was Circuit Judge Albert W. Northrup, did believe there was probable cause because of the package going there to the house, but just gave them a standard warrant. Standard warrant where they have to... Police, we have a warrant, standard warrant, not break in the door and assassinate the dog kind of warrant, a regular old knock and announce, have to, you know, protect privacy, Fourth Amendment, all that kind of stuff. Now, another development, just recently, just yesterday, the police in that county, Prince George's County Police, announced yesterday they arrested a delivery man and another man who were involved in a scheme to smuggle marijuana by shipping packages addressed to unsuspecting recipients. So basically an identity theft kind of a deal here where two guys working together, one guy works for the shipping agency. The first guy ships it to Bob's house on 123 Main Street, and he knows that his buddy runs that delivery route so he can get the drugs, right? So a complete case of mistaken identity, and the mayor discussed this in a press conference.
Trinity was an innocent victim and random victim of identity theft.
That's his wife, Trinity.
Apparently so were four or five other county residents whose names and addresses were stolen and used as addresses on drug packages. However, Trinity and our family have not been treated as victims. Sheriff Jackson said yesterday that deputies were engaged by our dogs. This is simply false. The deputies opened fire and executed our dogs the very second they broke down the front door. The thoughtless execution of Peyton and Chase was premeditated, without provocation, and appears to have been done for sport. Trinity and I happen to be a mayor, and so you all are all here right now. But Trinity and I deeply feel the pain of the people who don't have that opportunity to tell their story, and often are just presumed guilty. And ultimately, if changes aren't made, those people are going to be affected.
That's right. Then this is the militarization of our police force in the name of this stupid war on drugs, bursting down people's doors with flashbang grenades and automatic weapons at the ready in order to try to stop people from smoking weed. It's the most ridiculous thing. And don't think this is an isolated case either. You know, we look at the case of Rachel Hoffman that I told you about down in Florida, where the cops sent her on a drug sting and she ends up getting murdered, and then they lied about what happened in that case, too. This is going on all across the country. I encourage you to go out to Google and type in drug war victims. It'll take you to a website. You'll get to learn about lots of people's stories here. John Adams, a 64-year-old from Lebanon, Tennessee, shot to death during a SWAT raid where the house didn't match the description of the warrant. Xavier Bennett, 8 years old, shot to death during a pre-dawn drug raid. Let's see here. Reverend Asseline Williams, who has a heart attack after the cops break down his door serving a SWAT-type drug raid, and they had the wrong address. Ismael Menya, 45 years old, Denver, Colorado, barged into his house, shot to death. They had the wrong address. Mario Paz, Compton, California, 65 years old, burst into his house. No drugs were found. Manuel Ramirez, Stockton, California, burst in. Alberto Sepulveda, 11 years old, shot to death by a shotgun blast while lying face down on the ground following police orders, shot in a SWAT raid. He was a seventh grader. And I've got a number more than I can get to during this segment. But if you think this is an isolated incident, it is not. It's just getting attention because this man is a well-to-do white man who's a mayor. That's why you're hearing about it now. And I am not going to rest until we get this stupid war on drugs ended and we start treating it like a public health problem that it is and stop trying to make criminals out of regular normal people that are just minding their own business.
I am so with you on this one, Radical Russ. Because I live here in D.C. and I heard about this story. And it's the fact that it should take
them making such a massive blunder as to do this to a mayor of a town, basically, mm-hmm. to get this kind of information out to the public is just sickening.
Yeah.
And a lot of people, like me, love their pets like their children. And mm-hmm. anybody, and I am talking directly to the police officers who did this, anybody who misuses their authority like this is garbage. You are scum.
Yeah, it's absolutely true.
You disgust me.
Absolutely true, man. And I'm going to take a break here and get back to my happy place. If you'd like to talk about this issue, it's 888-7-RADICAL, 888-772-3422. Coming up in the next segment, we'll also talk about that anthrax killer. Did he act alone? Yeah, right. This is the Russ Belville Show.
You're tuned to the Russ Belville Show, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com. And 620KPOJ.com.
America's double R7 secret agent of progressive change. The name's Belville. Russ Belville. This is the Russ Belville Show.
Welcome back. 23 after the hour. Now I just need Q to give me one of those fancy pen guns and the wristwatch with lasers in it. That's what I need.
Yes, excellent.
Very good.
Thank you.
We're getting over this last story we were talking about here, the Shy Calvo story about the drug raid gone bad, where they, you know, they had obviously had the wrong guy and then shot the dogs to death. And Stevie and I were kind of talking about this and the animal cruelty involved in here. And it's just, you know, the kind of people that are cruel to animals, it's just such a big red flag.
Seriously.
To the psychos that are out there. Anybody had hurt a dog like that.
Yeah. It's just like one of those things that was on the list to make you into a real scumbag, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, as far as drug war stories go, you know, I cover a lot of these stories in my day job, and you know, sometimes when I'm telling these stories, you hear the people that will blame the victim. You know, this happened in the Rachel Hoffman story when you know, Rachel Hoffman was the Florida girl who was a low-level marijuana dealer, and they had her go undercover to buy a huge amount of narcotics, and they figured it out, and the drug dealer shot her. And we told that story a couple weeks ago. And when I tell that story, one of the reactions I'll get from some people that are very anti-drug, or I should say pro-prohibition, is that they say, well, you know, she deserved it. You know, she got involved. She knew better. You know, drugs are illegal. That's what happens when you get involved with bad people. Bad things are going to happen like that. And that always, you know, really makes me angry when
Seriously,
I hear that.
That's garbage as well.
Yeah, but I can at least see the crooked logic they're using, you know, that there, it's not as if, you know, being involved with drugs is harmless. People know that. But in this situation, I think the cops really messed up in this Shy Calvo situation, mm-hmm. because we're talking about dogs. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing, is a dog is always innocent.
Yeah, dog, exactly.
Dog's not guilty of anything. And if this brings forth people to shines a spotlight on these no-knock raids, you know, this whole SWAT team militarization for these drug raids. First of all, you got to understand, SWAT teams were invented back in the, when was it? It was that Philadelphia thing where the terror, I forget the exact date, but the SWAT teams were put together for hostage situations and situations of imminent danger.
Yeah.
What was the imminent danger of a 32-pound box of pot sitting on the guy's step? No imminent danger there at all.
Even if it exploded, the neighborhood would just get a bit high.
Yeah. You know? I mean, the only thing that was in danger is the stock of Cheetos at the convenience store. I mean, this idea, you know, and this happens a lot in these drug raids, and they always justify this by saying, well, we have to do these no-knock raids because we don't want to give the criminals a chance to destroy the evidence. And the idea here would be that you have some, you know, big bad drug dealer with a Tech-9 and a couple of ounces of coke, and he's going to flush it down the toilet or something. How in the world do you get rid of 32 pounds of marijuana in the time that it takes police to say, open up, we have a warrant? What, this guy got like an incinerator?
You throw a doily on it and pretend it's a footstool.
Does he have a couple of jam bands hanging out at the house? I mean,
but again, like this Rachel Hoffman story, this is just another example of the innocent getting the bad end of the stick.
Yeah.
With the Rachel Hoffman thing, they sent a college girl
to deal with some serious badass drug dealers.
Yeah, yeah. It's again, and
Operation Get Behind the Innocent.
There we go. Operation Use College Girl for Bait is what it was.
Exactly.
And this is, you know, people, you know, when we talk about the drug war, like, I don't do drugs. I don't care what happens. Well, this is how it affects you. This is how it affects you, the average person who doesn't do drugs. It happens when the police serve a warrant on a wrong address. I could give you 24 cases easily where cops have broken into the wrong address and shot off their flashbang grenades and yelled at everyone to get on the floor and handcuffed them and held guns to them and questioned them. And then they only found out, oops, we transposed an address. It happens all the time. And I'm not trying to, you know, get too down on the police in this situation. They're doing their jobs, and unfortunately their job requires them to do something that's ridiculous as far as public policy goes. I mean, that's the fault of our elected officials for not standing up and coming up with a more sensible drug policy in this country. But really, do we need to have these no-knock raids bursting into people's houses, ignoring their Fourth Amendment rights, all over something like a box of pot? This is, you know, it's sad, and it's really, really sad for those dogs.
And as the mayor said, executing their dogs for sport.
Yeah. Well, you know, and this happens, too, because there's so much in this war on drugs where they characterize users of drugs as being less than human, as being, animals, as being, you know, criminals, right? You should check this out. There's a website, the ONDCP, you know, the Drug Czar, has this website called AboveTheInfluence.com. And you can go right there to that site. And this is where they put all their ads and their little public service things. They have a web-based production. It's a video. It's like 10 or 15 minutes long. I can't remember. It's called Stoners in the Mist. You ought to Google this one, Stoners in the Mist. And you want to see why the police feel like they can just burst into people's houses and treat them like animals. Check out that video, Stoners in the Mist, and it'll show you why they act this way. The video is basically kind of like one of those old National Geographics or Wild Kingdoms, you know, where they go out to the wild and they track animals, except this time the animals are the stoners. Right. And they put tracking collars on them as if they were wildebeest, and they push them through all these tests. It's really amazing. And if you want to see how this mindset evolved, where the police and these SWAT teams and our public officials think of drug users as less than human and less deserving of their rights, that's definitely one to check out, is this Stoners in the Mist thing. All right, coming back after the break, we're going to be taking your calls at 888-7-RADICAL, 888-772-3422. And the subject coming up in our next segment is Bruce Ivins, the so-called anthrax killer. Did he act alone, or was our government involved in terrorizing our own citizens? I'm Radical Russ. We'll be right back.
KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com. Call now at 1-888-7-RADICAL. We'll even speak slowly for conservatives.
Come back 35 after the hour. Earlier on in the show, we were talking about Ron Suskin's new book and how he interviewed intelligence officials that found that the Iraqi intelligence people, Habush, the leader of Iraqi intelligence, told Bush that there were no WMDs. No WMDs in Saddam's Iraq prior to the invasion. It's proven to be a lie. So I want to go to the phones and talk about this one a little bit at 888-7-RADICAL. I've got Larry on the line, and he held held on the line quite a while. But thank you for that, Larry, from California. You're on the air.
Hello, Russ. Wanted to hit first on the that Edwards guy. I thought it was just a timing issue. And that's why he came out right now. It's a good, convenient time. He's not in anything big for him, and it's a quiet time for the Democrats politically.
Yeah.
As far as the WMDs, though, I wanted to know how many people have to die before a weapon is a WMD.
What makes a weapon of mass destruction? I guess the general definition is one that can be used in a localized area to kill mass amounts of civilians, but you know, that could be an M60 machine gun, couldn't it?
So if you killed thousands of Kurds with chemical weapons, that would qualify.
Yeah, I think chemical weapons would qualify as WMDs. Sure.
Now, don't isn't it true that Saddam killed thousands of Kurds with chemical weapons?
In fact, he did while George H.W. Bush was president, and we didn't hear H.W. make much of a noise about it.
No, I understand that. I'm just I keep hearing that there were no WMDs, but I know that there were because thousands of people died from them.
Oh, sure. We knew there were WMDs because we kept the receipts. We sold those WMDs. We've got pictures of them.
I know that, too.
Yeah, Rumsfeld.
I'm a conservative, but I'm not a Republican. I don't side with either of the parties on this issue as far as any of the way they're handling either side of it.
Yeah.
But I just, every time I hear there's no WMDs, I've got to say, yeah, there were.
Well, there were, and that's the thing. We're talking about verb tenses now. We're talking about the verb tenses. There were WMDs at one time, but leading up to 2000, 2001, 2002, when we were starting to think about, you know, especially after 9/11, when we were starting to investigate going into Iraq, that's when there were no WMDs. That's what the Susskind book is saying, is by the time we got around to invading and leading up to the invasion, there were no WMDs.
Okay. Now, with that, I also have to wonder, do you have to actually have a nuclear weapon sitting in the front yard, or is it enough to have all the components around your country ready to build them if you decide to go ahead and do that? And
well,
I ask that because of the yellow cake that came out just a couple weeks ago.
Well, okay. We also have the yellow cake forgery out of Niger that happened. You know, that was the what Joseph Wilson was talking about. Condi Rice was fluffing up the idea that the aluminum tubes could be used and all of that. So, you know, if we want to talk about whether or not a country would have the facilities to do it, that's the other thing that the International Atomic Energy Agency there, the IAEA, said that Saddam did not have that capability either. So, you know, trying to draw this, you know, to go back in hindsight and say, well, you know, of course they had WMDs. You know, I just don't believe that.
I'm not saying he did. I don't think he did. I think he wanted them real bad, and I think he hoped that he could do it.
Yeah.
And I think he was doing everything he could without getting caught to get it done. But I understand, too, that he did not have WMDs. However, if a man walks into your bank and draws his pocket at you and says, there's a gun in here, and I'm going to shoot you if you don't give me all your money, are you going to give him all the money or test the theory of the gun first?
Well, it's not a good analogy because, you know, we're talking about an immediate danger with the person with the gun, whereas with the WMDs, we had inspectors on the ground watching those Al-Samud missiles being destroyed. So no doubt about that.
I recall, all we had from Saddam was a guarantee that he did have them. He never said he didn't have them. He always said he had them or wanted them and was going to use them soon as he could against the United States.
Okay. Well, I'll let you continue to believe that. I don't have the time to go through all the debunks because I got a few more callers hanging on the line. But thanks for your call, Larry. I appreciate it. Let's move on to Chicago, Illinois. We've got Dave in Chicago on the line. Dave, welcome to the show.
Hey, Radical Russ. Nice to talk to you. I love seeing that Ron Suskind book come out. That's like three books in the last 8 weeks. You got Scott McClellan. You got Vince Bugliosi, and now you got this guy, and they're all talking about the same thing. I showed a few people and blew their mind. They had no idea this was going on because it's not getting any news.
Yeah.
Getting the proper news. I got Suskind got some.
Yeah, and that's what, you know, and this revisionism, you know, that goes back, you know, even talking to my previous caller there, of people wanting to try to say, well, everybody thought he had WMDs. Well, you know, he had used them before. You know, well, he was a bad guy. Isn't it good that he's gone? Well, you can try and make those cases, but the way I look at it, if you're going to declare war and send our military forces in there to risk their life and limb, you don't go off a whim. You don't go off a hunch. You don't go off a guess.
Right.
You better have proof.
And that's like Paul Rykoff's book, Chasing Ghosts, Chapter 1. George Bush had better be effing right is the title.
Yeah, exactly right.
But what I really called about was that, you didn't mention at all, the Republican protest on the House floor.
Oh,
the best way to show righties, you know, what's really going on here. So much bad acting, it's like a B-movie.
Reminds me of Leonard Pinth Garnell from Saturday Night Live with Bad Playhouse Theater.
There you go. Yeah. I got a little piece of audio from it. You ready?
Go ahead.
Play a piece of audio from the House floor. The Republican representatives blaming Nancy Pelosi for everything. You ready?
You go.
Here it comes.
Betsy, I don't like Betsy Pelosi because she won't let us through trial. I wanted to drill. Everybody was talking about it. Everybody wanted to drill trial, but that's Betsy Pelosi. She won't let us through trial. You know what she did? She left, and she turned off the lights, and everybody was scared, and I got scared.
Yes, Dave, I think you nailed it, man. You got that one down.
It's like being in the room with them.
It's a beautiful thing. Hey, Dave, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate your call. Got another one I got to get to here. Let's go to Teresa in New York. Teresa, welcome to the show.
Hi, Russ. I just wanted to mention that you were talking about the, you know, police brutality.
Yeah.
And I lived in England for a while in the 80s, and I think just at that point, they started to get guns. They only gave the detectives guns, though.
Yeah.
And they would have to turn them in at night. And anyhow, I think that we should disarm our police and also take away their tasers.
Oh, God. Yeah, don't even get me started on the whole taser incidents there, the 50,000 volts. And that's basically it's a crapshoot. When you taser someone, you don't know that they don't have epilepsy or a heart condition or they're on some sort of amphetamine or something that's going to speed up their heart and instantly kill them. I mean, that's what we're talking about when we're talking about tasers. It's ridiculous. I mean, we had this case of I just saw a case of a young boy who got tasered like 21 times while there was like 3 or 4 cops on him. I mean, this is just ridiculous, this use of force by our police forces that have been so militarized. I completely agree with you, Teresa.
Freudian slip there.
Yeah, no kidding.
I'm afraid I'm going to lose you, but thank you for mentioning this. It's very, very important.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you, Teresa, for bringing it back up. Yeah, Stevie, I mean, you guys don't have a whole lot of cases of serious police brutality going on there in England, do you?
Not as many as you do here. I mean, the British police force hasn't been armed for, well, ever, basically.
Yeah.
And, hey, we seem to be doing all right.
Yeah, seems to be all right. Hmm.
And, they'll say, oh, but we gotta have them armed so that they can defend themselves against all the armed criminals. Well, maybe if you had better gun control, you wouldn't have armed criminals, would you?
Well, yeah, there we go. That's a whole nother show we could go on, that one. Yeah, and as far as Dave's point about the Republican Congress, yeah, this is the stunt they've been pulling this week where, you know, after the House went into recess, even with the lights off and the mics turned off, they held their little protest, their little temper tantrum, where they're basically saying, drill here, drill now, drill here, drill now. We've got to drill. We got to drill for oil. We got to drill. Drill. We're having some gas problems. We got to drill. The gas costs too much. We got to drill. Well, look, folks, we already know that the drilling, even if we were to go out and drill, it wouldn't come online till like 2030 or something like that. So it has no short-term impact. But the main thing about this, too, that I think people are losing in this, and this came across in that Paris Hilton ad, you know, when Paris was saying, well, I think we ought to drill so that we can bridge the gap until we get the... can't even believe I'm talking about Paris Hilton having an energy plan. But, you know, the thing that people are missing in this is that the oil companies already have millions of acres of leases that they're not drilling on now. If they're not drilling on the land they have now, why will giving them more land or ocean or whatever to drill on, why is that going to get them to be drilling when they're not even drilling on the stuff they have now? You want to know why? It has to do with speculation, folks. It has to do with all these market speculators. Don't you find it a little curious that the price of gas goes up and up and up and up and up until it hits about 4.25? And then when people suddenly start cutting back and using less gas and driving less, miraculously, the price comes down 30 cents. What do you know? It's almost like you can almost picture them twisting a little vice. Twisting the vice on the American people. How much can we squeeze out of them? Squeeze another nickel. And then we realize the nickels aren't coming out anymore. Pull it back a little bit. Loosen it up a little bit. Get it back down to 375. And then everybody will go, wow, 375, that's great. Forgetting that when Bush came into office, it was $1.50. This is the Russ Belville Show, your home for truly radical progressives. We're coming back with one more segment and your calls at 888-7-RADICAL. We're going to wrap things up in our free-for-all segment and take your emails at radicalruss@gmail.com. We'll be right back.
You're tuned to the Russ Belville Show, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com. And 620KPOJ.com.
Continue the conversation with Radical Russ online. Visit RadicalRuss.com and email RadicalRuss@gmail.com.
Hey, welcome back to the show. 51 after the hour. Here's our last segment. And earlier on in the show, I played some clips on the Lunatic Fringe, and I played one from Rush Limbaugh. He was talking about the Exxon Valdez spill. And, you know, the right-wingers right now, they want to drill so bad that they're trying to, you know, get everyone to believe that this oil drilling is environmentally friendly and it never hurts the ocean and everything's just fine. Let me play that clip for you real quick.
They're preparing a retrospective special, ladies and gentlemen, on the disaster that was the oil spill at Prince William Sound for the Exxon Valdez. What they will not tell you is that if you go up there today, you won't find any evidence of it. Nature cleaned up itself so damn fast. It was such a laughable thing to watch people with dish towels and Dawn dishwashing detergent wiping oil off of the rocks at Prince William Sound. The sea eats oil. The sea eats oil alive. That place up there, nature cleaned it up faster than we ever could.
So I wanted to bring that clip back because I got a caller on the line from Sioux City, Iowa. Lee is on the phone, and Lee wants to discuss that a little bit. So, Lee, welcome to the Russ Belville Show.
Yeah, thank you, Russ. This is the first time I've actually listened to your show.
Well, thanks for listening.
Basically, what I was wanting to comment on was the energy policy here. I keep hearing everywhere that it's 10 years, 20 years, 30 years before it's possible to get any kind of production out of the OCS.
Mm-hmm.
Any place where infrastructure exists now, such as the coastal states of Florida, Louisiana, and Texas, you're looking at a maximum of 2 years. And I know this because I used to be a contractor for Shell Western Exploration and Production.
Okay, then why aren't they drilling on the leases they already have and getting us some of that cheap oil?
Well, first of all, basically when they lease the property, they lease outright. So there's no guarantee there's anything there.
Right.
Once they lease the property, they send in the geologist and the seismograph crews, and they find out if there's anything there worth drilling. Well, if there's nothing there worth drilling, they're still locked into the lease for X amount of years. So if there's nothing there to drill, there's no sense in punching a dry hole if you know there's nothing there.
Okay, so are you saying then that of all the oil leases they've got right now, and the vast majority of which they're not drilling on, all that's empty?
Not necessarily empty. It's either you'll have different things. Either there'd be too much to overcome to get what little bit is there.
Okay.
The cost to drill would far outweigh any profit you would get from what's there.
Okay, so is it your opinion then that if we were to do as the Republicans are asking here and start drilling offshore, that this would have a quick impact on our gas prices?
I don't know about right now, but mm-hmm. I believe it would definitely wake OPEC up. One thing that we could do without drilling straight away is there's a lot of states, and I'm not saying Democrat or Republican, but I'm saying there's a lot of states who happen to be this term under Democratic control who levied what they call allowables on the wells. In other words, this well here can produce 400 barrels of oil a day. Well, the governor says, no, we're not going to let it produce 400 barrels of oil a day. That's going to produce 100 barrels of oil a day. And it can produce X amount of oil a month, so many barrels of oil a month. And if you exceed that amount of oil production, then we're going to shut that well in, and it will shut down until you catch up to your allowable.
Hmm. That sounds like a real tough business environment to work in. I can't imagine that these oil companies make any profit.
Well, there's profit in it, but you've got to realize for their profit, they're finding it. They're producing it, they're refining it, they're transporting it, and they're getting it to you to use. And out of that, they're getting what was the last estimate? Something like 10 to 12 cents a gallon. Or you've got Congress. Congress and the states are getting anywhere between 20 to 26 cents a gallon. And, I mean, at least the oil companies work for their share. I haven't seen Congress do anything for their share.
Okay, so the Congress is freeloading on oil company profits, and the poor oil companies are hardly making a dime. Have I got that right?
No, they're not freeloading off the oil companies. Basically, they're freeloading off the people of this country. The people of this country, are the, well, except for in Alaska. In Alaska, you don't own mineral rights. The state retains those.
Right.
Anywhere where you own property and you have mineral rights, they're basically getting a free cut of your profits.
All right. Well, let's look at it this way. The oil and gas companies get millions of acres of leases and property from the public lands of America, and they get this at an incredible bargain rate from the government. Also, the government subsidizes these oil companies with massive tax breaks. And I guess I'm not following what the what your issue here is with the government having a stake in that. You don't think that oil profits or that gas taxes should be used to fix our roads or build bridges or anything like that?
Well, yeah, I believe the gas taxes should be used to fix the roads. But the problem is the Department of Transportation's funds there have become slush funds for the congressmen to, for their earmarks and their pork barrel spending. That's why they're saying that our DOT fund is going to be empty or in deficit by next year or the end of next year. Hmm. I mean, if they're gonna say, well, we're gonna use the gas taxes to fix the roads, then use the gas taxes to fix the roads. Don't use it for your earmarks and your special interests.
All right. Well, that's quite an interesting argument, Lee. I appreciate you for calling in. You know, Exxon last year made about $40 billion in net profit. So it doesn't look like they're having too much of a difficulty. But interesting perspective. I appreciate you calling in. I hope we get you listening in the future. And yeah, we're talking net profits here. We're talking, you know, above the board after all their expenses, after they pay for research and after they pay for drilling and after they pay for exploration and all of that. Net profit, $40 billion. I don't think that our solution to our energy crisis here is drilling more oil. It's kind of like saying the best way to get off crack is to find another dealer. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense. It's time to get off the oil Jones here. And I like Barack Obama's idea here of putting a windfall profits tax on these oil companies. You know, this idea that these oil companies are, you know, they did the work. They worked hard. They deserve, you know, all the profits they made because they worked. They're not freeloading. Man, when we're talking about public lands and all of the sweetheart deals the oil companies get, you cannot make that argument with a straight face. It just doesn't wash. All right, we got to wrap things up here for the show. I want to remind you, if you didn't get a chance to call in, you can email me. RadicalRuss@gmail.com is the email address, and we'll cover some of those emails on the air on another show. We're here every weekend at this time on this channel, so please check us out in the future. For Stevie Lee Webb, I'm Radical Russ, your Red State refugee, thanking you for joining us here for the show. I hope y'all have a great Olympics and weekend, and go USA. Peace out and take care of yourselves.